It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Welcome to the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher, and have we got a show for you today. Not only do we have Dusty Dvorak, former Chicago Bear and Oklahoma Sooner, talking about the retirement of Bob Stoops, we'll also be talking with Mac Engel of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram about a player that could be, we'll find out later today, could be in the College World Series that has no place on the mound ever again. Yeah, listen in for that. And then coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Mike Roberts of Westward, talking about the Tumpkin scandal. Scandal? I don't know. Maybe a tough word there, but the Tumpkin situation at CU Boulder and with what's going on there, because we got all that news today. Is it a slap on the wrist? Is it a just punishment? Will there be more by the NCAA? We'll talk to Mike Roberts about that. But first off, today, just found out the other day that Louisville head coach Rick Pitino, he's going to be suspended for the first five ACC games this next year for failing to monitor his program during alleged sex for pay scandal. And the program will be on probation for 4 years. But it's not a postseason probation. It is a don't screw up again probation. Now, five games for Pitino, okay? Five games. Luckily, they at least made it five ACC games, because if they'd have done, well, the first five games of the season, what, when you're playing McPherson State, I don't know if they're playing McPherson or not, but when they play these itty-bitty schools that they just wipe up all over the court, I'm glad they at least made it games that should be competitive, because there's got to be something done about this, okay? We've talked about it ad nauseum here on the University of Fish about all the sexual improprieties going on in college sports. And then when it's pretty much, you could say, accepted by the school. I mean, the school knew what was going on. Yes, they did have the self-imposed postseason ban a couple years ago. This story is 2-3 years old. We know that. But they had the 1 year postseason probation they put themselves on. But they sucked that year. It didn't really matter. It's not like they were going to go win the national championship. Hey, we ain't really got a team this year. Yeah, we're going to ban ourselves from going to the postseason. I'm sorry, Rick Pitino. That does not float with me. And it's horrible. They're bringing in these prostitutes for these players, for these recruits. We're talking 16, 17-year-old kids that are going, hey, here's a hooker for you. Welcome to Louisville. I mean, at 16, 17, I could say as a kid, I'd go, hey, that's not too bad. But it's wrong. It's wrong. The professor says it's wrong. The law says it's wrong. It's just wrong. And I think five games is not even a sentence to him. It's not. I mean, because you want to have an assistant coach do it. If you'd have put Pitino out for a year, that would have made a statement. That would have made a statement to the rest of the NCAA, the rest of these basketball coaches that are bringing in these kids going, hey, you can do whatever you want while you're here because we don't care. We want you to come to school here. We want you to sell our merchandise that you don't get any money off of. That's an entirely different subject, how these kids are pretty much pimped out. Hey, you can make us all this money and we're giving you nothing. Well, I guess we're giving you a college education, but if these kids are any good, they're not even staying for a college education. They're pretty much playing school, as Cardale Jones would say from Ohio State. They're playing school for a year and a half, maybe a year and a half, maybe just that first semester being one and done. So Rick Pitino, you got off light. You're lucky. Anyway, that's enough ranting for right now. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Mike Roberts of Westward, the newspaper up in the Denver area, talking about the Tumpkin CU scandal and what it means to the school and where they move on from here. I'm the professor. You're listening to University of Fish right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Welcome back to the University of Fish, and I wish we were talking about good things going on in college sports. Yes, we do have the College Baseball World Series going on, but up in Boulder, not so good news. We had a great football season, but there was a little something extra going on around the team. We're joined by Mike Roberts of Westword. Great little independent, no, it's not a little, but an independent newspaper, so don't have to sway one way or the other. They can actually speak their mind. Mike, how you doing today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, we might be looking at a sort of a Penn State situation up here in Boulder with former coach Joe Tumkin. Give us a little background on that.
Joe Tumkin was a defensive coach for the CU Buffs and was on the coaching staff this last year when the team finally turned it around and had its best season in many years since the recruiting scandal a decade or so ago. But in December, his significant other reached out originally to the wife of head coach Mike McIntyre, someone who she knew socially, and said that Joe Tumkin had been abusing her. Affidavits in the case say that the number of abuse allegations is in excess of 100, so a real serious series of events. And significant other of Joe Tumkin also spoke to Mike McIntyre. He's said to have been very sensitive to her and compassionate. However, this was not reported officially through the administration process at CU, and Tumkin remained on the staff. And this dragged out through most of the month of December until finally a reporter at the Boulder Daily Camera came across a reference to a request for a restraining order, and they actually let Tumkin go. In early February, Sports Illustrated wrote an expose featuring an interview with the woman in this case, and the entire thing blew up. It was clear that neither McIntyre nor any other university official had immediately put in information about this accusation against Tumkin, and it certainly was a PR disaster on every level. So now the CU Board of Regents has come out after a number of investigative reports under the oversight of former Senator Ken Salazar, and the chancellor at the university, Phil DeStefano, has been suspended for 10 days, and Mike McIntyre and the athletic director there, Rick George, have also been directed to give $100,000 apiece to various charities, including a CU fund for domestic violence. So this is something being done in advance in an effort to try to save Mike McIntyre's job, essentially, instead of him being forced to resign right as the CU football program has finally been righted. They're trying to do everything they can to keep him in place. But there's a lawsuit that will be coming in this case from the victim, and it doesn't appear to be going away quietly.
Oh, it's not going to. I mean, because you look back at what's happened at CU, probably, let's just go with this millennial. You had the Katie Nida case. You had everything else that was going on with the recruiting scandals and everything and the sexual favors for the recruits. And it's almost, I would hate to call it the Baylor of the Rockies, but it's looking a lot like that recently. And it's, and I think the $100,000 to McIntyre is a slap on the wrist, because Tumkin wasn't coming home and going, "Hey, honey, how was your day?" He was coming home and just going, "Hey, I'm pissed off. I'm going to start choking you." Because this happened, like you said, in excess of 100 times. She was choked more than 100 times, had an implant knocked out of her mouth by this guy. It's just craziness up there in Boulder. Is there anything they can do to, like, quell the tide that's going to come? Because, like I mentioned earlier, this could get Penn State-ish on us.
Well, as you suggest there, this is something that the university is trying to basically punish themselves before they can be punished for them. But the attorney for this woman used almost exactly the same language you did there. He suggested that this was a slap on the wrist, a far lighter punishment than if there had been recruiting violations. And the recruiting scandal that took place in CU, a decade plus ago, basically destroyed the program for years and years. We went through the doldrums of Dan Hawkins, and the one season that John Embry was head coach was just a catastrophe.
I forgot about Embry. So,
oh, my God. Well, he was only there for a year, and in fact, Bill McCartney, the most arguably the most successful coach ever at CU and for whom Embry played, argued that he was only given a year because he was black. Nonetheless, it was a terrible season, and Mike McIntyre has finally started to turn the ship around. This is something that the closer you look at it, the worse it looks. And CU is not going to be able to just put this all behind it with this self-punishment that we discussed earlier.
If you were Nostradamus, I mean, I know none of us are, but if you looked into your crystal ball, what do you see happening with the CU Buffs and the program in Boulder?
It's clear by the process that CU has gone through that they really, really want to keep Mike McIntyre. So I expect that they will continue to do that. A lot of the fire would be put out if they canned Mike McIntyre, but he just won the Home Depot Coach of the Year this last year. He's somebody who is very highly thought of for his on-the-field stuff. And I think that this really could drag out in a similar way to the recruiting scandals that we were talking about that really kind of ran from 2001 to 2005. So we could be in for years of this, depending on how things go. I don't think this is the end. I think this is close to the beginning.
I do understand you, and I want to thank you, sir, for coming on. I know we're running short on time, but thank you for coming on. And, Mike, you are always welcome at the University of Fish. I don't know how welcome either one of us are going to be up in Boulder anymore, but you're always welcome on the University of Fish. Mike Roberts with Westward. We'll be right back on the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. We are joined now by Fort Worth Star-Telegram writer Mac Engel. Mac, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome to the University of Fish, and I want to talk to you a little bit about, we've got the College World Series that gets underway later today, but Oregon State has a pitcher, great pitcher. He has a .76 ERA, and he's a lefty, which means anybody would be fearing to face him, but he's got a little bit more baggage than that, doesn't he?
Yeah, that might be the understatement of the millennium, rather. He's a registered sex offender, and it's pretty obvious that he committed these acts, crimes, sins, whatever you want to call them, when he was 15 years old and living in the state of Washington. And it's pretty apparent that he did go through the court system, juvenile detention, counseling, et cetera, and he assaulted a member of his family who was sick. And he did everything that the courts asked, and it's pretty apparent that he did not reveal to anybody, nor did anybody find out during the recruiting process, that he was a registered sex offender. And the only reason it went unnoticed is because he failed to report it upon his 21st birthday, 10 days within his 21st birthday in Oregon, that he was a registered sex offender, which is basically a violation. And that's the only reason it popped up to the reporters in the Oregonian who uncovered this a couple of weeks ago. And since then, Luke Heimlich has not pitched at all for the Beavers.
You've got to love investigative journalists because they did a background check on the whole team, and that's when this popped up. And I contacted the Oregon State Athletic Department asking if Heimlich was going to make the trip, and Hank Hager's very short, blunt answer was, "We have no comment on that," and he pretty much hung up on me after that. Now, this goes into a deeper problem, it really does, and that there are no, like, standard background checks for college recruits. I mean, we've seen it down in Baylor as well, when, I can't remember the kid's name, comes from Boise State. There was no background check.
Oh, Sam Ukwuachu.
Yeah, Ukwuachu.
Yeah, but the difference is, with Ukwuachu, what his instance was, had been officially, from all the paperwork standpoint, been cleared and documented. I mean, everybody's sitting there saying they don't know anything. I mean, at least there it was on paper, whereas Heimlich's was virtually uncovered by the Oregon State baseball coach, Pat Casey, who, you know, by all accounts, is a really good guy. I mean, he's got the top team in college baseball this season. They only lost four games. And by all accounts, he is as good and as decent a guy as you'll find in that profession. It was a simple oversight. Now, you know, Luke Heimlich was a minor when he committed these acts, so that there's an added layer of complication in terms of finding that. But I think what it goes to a larger issue is college coaches who aren't necessarily doing all their due diligence to make sure who it is they're exactly recruiting. Now, is it fair to Pat Casey? No, because I think this is a very rare and exceptional circumstance. But I think the larger issue is that nobody told him during the recruiting process. The parents didn't. The high school coach didn't. Maybe the traveling select team coach didn't. Nobody told Pat Casey that this guy had a very serious mark on his record. And I think you and I would both agree that when you're looking at a teenager as a potential recruit, the problem you are considering is, okay, well, if he has a sort of a criminal background, maybe it's a minor in possession, maybe it's a DWI, maybe he stole something out of a convenience store. It's something relatively minor. The bigger ones are usually if there are assault charges of some sort. And that's when the question comes in, like, well, wait a minute, why are we recruiting this kid? Why are we offering this kid a scholarship? And we've seen that a lot this year, as more evidence suggests that these guys are getting in, and these coaches are doing it and saying, well, we think he's a good kid, we've got to give him a second chance, we're going to put him in this special program, and we're going to keep a close eye on him, and that's great. This one completely fell through the crack until he was almost to the end of his junior, after his junior year. He was done. His junior year in college was over, and he was going to be drafted as a top four round pick, I should say. It's an important distinction. Maybe even higher than that, because he's left-handed and he had a spectacular season as a junior. Now he didn't get drafted at all. No Major League Baseball team would draft Luke Heimlich, and now it's a question, and accused himself from pitching in the Super Regional against Vanderbilt. Oregon State won both games, and now the question is whether or not he will pitch again at all for Oregon State. And then the other issue is, if he didn't get drafted and he elects not to make himself eligible as a free agent to baseball teams anywhere, does he come back to Oregon State to pitch? Pat Casey's in a really difficult spot. He's going to have support at Corvallis because he's Pat Casey and because the guy's a good pitcher. But the one problem I have with this, Tim, is that we're talking about the pitcher. We're not talking about the girl. And the girl's life is screwed up. Now, I'm sure Luke Heimlich's life is screwed up and probably will be forever as a result of this going as widely public as it is. But there's an 11-year-old girl out there who has to deal with a level of pain, sadness, and hurt that she will never, ever be able to fully explain. And that's the tragedy, not Luke Heimlich.
It really, it truly is. I mean, because this girl is still very young. She's barely even a teenager, if she is a teenager yet, because you figure as a junior, he's probably 20, 21 years old, and she was 6 at the time. So we're looking at like a 12, 13-year-old girl who's still dealing with all these problems.
She's 11, and I think, you know, and I know there are advocates for victims who rightly point out the, I don't want to say hypocrisy, but the sadness and all this and all of the sympathy that's going out to Luke Heimlich. And look, at some point he's got to be able to move forward. He does. And look, you can't call what he did a mistake.
No.
A mistake is falling down. A mistake is going too fast. This was repeated sexual violations of a little girl when he was 15. This wasn't once. This was multiple times. And I'm sorry, he knew what the hell he was doing. And this isn't about, oh, it's not a very Christian thing to say. Well, neither is what he did. And as far as I'm concerned, if that is my daughter, I can't even begin to describe to you my reaction. And to complicate matters further is that it was a little girl who was in his family. So that adds an extra layer of torture to this situation that family has to deal with it. And the bottom line is Luke Heimlich is only 21 years old. He has his whole life in front of him. And while he went to counseling and all that other stuff, nobody knows how effective that stuff is. Nobody does. But as a 15-year-old, you know. If you're 8 or 9, you can sort of say, well, the kid's curious. If he's 17 years old and he has consensual sex with his 17-year-old girlfriend, and yet somehow that gets construed as
statutory or something, sex. Yeah.
Yeah, statutory rape. Thank you for that. Then you can sort of look at that and say, well, I don't know about that one. Or he's 18 and the girl's 17, because it does happen. There's nothing right about this. And as a 15-year-old, I'm sorry, as a dad, I would sit there and say, wait a minute, there's some wires crossed there that would really make me nervous. And I know he wants to live his life and move forward, and he should be given that chance. And that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. You can't stop giving up on people. But at the same time, the real priority shouldn't be Luke Heimlich. It should be the little girl. But at the same time, she's 11 now. How do you do that? Because she wants to be anonymous and remain in the shadows for the obvious reasons. She didn't want this out, and good for her. It's her decision. It's her parents' decision, and they can deal with that with a later date when she's fully aware of, everything and what it means. But for the time being, I think the bigger sort of tragedy in this is the fact that a college coach, a good one, and he made a mistake, and he knows it, and there are others too who have done this, totally had no idea that he had a registered sex offender on his team. And that's the part that those guys they just have to be more mindful of it. And I get it. I feel for Pat Casey in this instance, because I'm sure the Luke Heimlich he knows, he can't even fathom he would do something like this. And that happens. It happens. So there are some really big challenges ahead for everybody, every party involved. But to me, this is a kid's sport played by really talented kids. And the fact of the matter is, he is a sexual offender of a little girl. And there's no way around that. Should he be able to move on? Yes. But I don't know how to make that work and how all these things fit without making it seem like he gets preferential treatment in spite of the fact it was a disgusting, sickening, sinful act and crime.
Well, we're talking with Mac Engle of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, since I cover college sports, I all too often have to talk about a player involved in sexual assault, and I talk about how that is obviously premeditated because, yeah, you might make the first move on the girl just out of dumb luck, but then the continued act takes conscious thought, and people always go, well, Joe Mixon hit a girl, that was a split-second decision that, it's like a reaction. It's not something he sat and thought about, I want to hit this girl in the jaw. And sexual assault is so much different than something that is a heat-of-the-moment issue like that. But let's get to a little lighter subject, and Joe Mixon's a great segue to that. The Demon of Texas retired last week there in Oklahoma because Bob Stoops had a great record against the colleges there in the state of Texas. I mean, whether going back to the old Big 12 days when A&M was still in it, and let's talk about how is Texas celebrating this retirement?
I don't know if they're celebrating, because I think if you celebrate it, it acknowledges that Oklahoma got the best of you, even though they did. I think to celebrate it is to say, wow, whew, thank God we couldn't beat him, even though they couldn't. And he had a winning record against every team in Texas, but by a pretty sizable margin, I might add. And he did it on the backs of a lot of Texans who crossed the border into Norman to play for the Sooners. The only team, in fact, it was the only team who had any degree of success against Bob in his career at Oklahoma was Texas. And UT went 7-11 against Bob. 7-11, and that was the best record anybody could do against Stoops.
And with most of those wins coming during Mac Brown.
Yeah, all but one. Charlie Strong had one, and that might have been the biggest. In fact, I think you can make it. I think that was the biggest upset of Bob Stoops' career. Texas wasn't ranked at the time; they weren't very good. This was 2 years ago at the Cotton Bowl, and nobody saw it coming. Actually, that's a lie. I had a feeling that Texas was going to give them a game. I don't know if I thought they were going to beat them, but I thought they were going to give them a game. But we thought that after UT won that game, okay, here we go, they're rolling. Texas is back. And now we can. Now Charlie's going to go, and it's going to be okay in Austin. And that turned out to be for naught. Kansas beat him at the end of the next year and get fired. So now everybody left in Texas. Tom Herman, the new head coach at UT, Gary Patterson at TCU, Matt Rule, the first-year coach at Baylor, Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech. They've all got to look up and say, okay, how are we going to get this new guy? And how are we going to prevent from Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley from doing what Bob just did to us the last 18 years? But there's an opportunity there, because as good as Lincoln Riley may be, he might be really good. He's still a first-year head coach, and that's a really hard thing to do. That what he's getting ready to do. Now, it's totally doable, and it's Oklahoma, so he's set up to do it, but that's hard, and you just never know. He's never been a head coach before, and I know he's the wonder kid and all that other stuff. Tom Herman at least has been a head coach before. I don't know if he's going to work at Texas. He's got a huge personality and ego, which is what you need for that school and that fan base and those alums. But I don't know if it's going to work. But at the same time, I think what you look at, the way Texas looks at Stoops is, okay, he's gone now. We're out of excuses. We got to go up there and kick this guy's ass. Because if they don't now, we just may be seeing a continuation of the Switzer and Stoops domination over UT.
Exactly. And, well, Lincoln Riley made his job a little easier, especially when they play that team from Lubbock, hiring Ruffin McNeil, because Ruffin had worked with Texas Tech, obviously, also, you know, was his head coach there at ECU. So Lincoln is setting himself up for success, and he's got a loaded team coming back. Now, Mac, I hadn't told you this, but full disclosure, I'm an OU alum.
Oh, so what did you think of this hire?
I thought it was a great hire. I was completely crestfallen the day it happened. I was like going, what is going on here? But I've talked with former OU players. We'll be hearing from Dusty Dvorak right after this. And when we talked, it was, you know, he was excited about Lincoln coming in.
Everybody's excited about the new guy. The bottom line is nobody has any idea. Everybody was excited at Texas Tech about Cliff Kingsbury. But Cliff Kingsbury didn't look so good without Johnny Manziel and a whole bunch of NFL offensive linemen and really offensive linemen in front of him with Mike Evans running go routes. And Lincoln Riley might be it, but you don't know. I mean, now, nobody knew about Stoops either when he came off of Spurrier's staff there in year 99, whenever it was.
It was 99.
Came to Norm, 99. But I think it's this idea that I'm always leery of the whole young, hot coach thing. I'm sure he's smart. I mean, Bob did not do this thinking Lincoln Riley was a Trojan horse to stick it up the OU administration. He didn't do that. He did it because he believed in him. This was not Bob Knight quitting in the middle of the season so he could put Pat Knight in, his son, as head coach of Texas Tech, even though Pat had no business being a head coach of that program or any other program for that matter. This isn't that. Bob knew what he was doing. He was trying to do right by the school, and he's trying to do right by Lincoln. It might work out, but you don't know that. And even though that team is stacked, if I'm Tom Herman, and Tom Herman has every single advantage known to man, if I'm Tom Herman, you better pounce, and you better get him now before he gets any sense of momentum in the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, Mac Engel, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to make sure that we do talk throughout the college football season, because it sounds like you're a little bit passionate about the state of Texas college football.
Yeah, you could say I was a little frustrated when the state of Texas got swept by Kansas State last year in football. The most embarrassing thing I've ever seen in my life. And then Kansas, where I went to school, I went to KU, beat Texas. At that point, you're like, you know what? Just shut it all down. What the hell's the point? Let's just become a basketball state. Yes, I would say for a state that prides itself as the best in football, we were anything but last year. And I'm praying to God that we turn it around next year.
Well, thank you, Mac. Thanks for joining the classroom this morning. We'll be talking to you soon.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. Sooner Nation still in shock after the retirement of Bob Stoops last Wednesday. I know I was completely crestfallen, like I told our last guest, Matt Engel of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He covers a lot of the Oklahoma Sooners as well as all the Texas schools, so he understands exactly what I was talking about. But I wanted to get one of his players, someone that knew him both personally, professionally, and as a coach. And so I went to one of our good friends that works in Oklahoma City with one of our sister stations, WWLS, the sports animal in Oklahoma City, Dusty Dvoracek. Had a chance to sit down with him last week, and here's how that went. Dusty, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, man? Thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Everybody that listens to the show knows that I'm an Oklahoma homer because I'm an alum, so I have a soft spot when it comes to Oklahoma. But the biggest news in college sports this week, sorry, Patty Gasso, it should have been the Oklahoma Sooners winning a back-to-back national championships in softball. We've talked about that earlier, but it had to be the surprise retirement of Coach Stoops. First off, tell me how Coach Stoops got you to Norman from Lake Dallas, and then the effect he had on you when you were there in Norman.
Well, man, you know, I was fortunate that Coach Stoops, Mike Stoops, actually was my recruiter. But I'll never forget the first time I met Coach Bob, and we came up for, I think it was Oklahoma, Kansas of the 2000 year. And I met him there, and I was just kind of blown away with him and his demeanor and love Mike. And then I come up for that Nebraska game in 2000, the game that really put Bob Stoops and Oklahoma on the map, brought Oklahoma back to prominence. And I committed that day in the I'll never forget, we're in the old Switzer Center in the weight room, and everybody's going crazy after the game. And, you know, Bob's hugging me and my family, and he's, you know, he's like, don't you want to be a part of this? And I'm like, absolutely, I'm in. Sign me up today. And as they kept winning and they went on to win a national championship, I was kind of like, I hope they don't pull this scholarship from me. You know, I want to go play for those guys. And they had such a passion for football it made you want to be a part of it. And I really valued and loved that about both Bob and Mike. They're football guys. They love football. They know football. And they love their players. They work them hard. They ask a lot. They hold you accountable. But they hug you and love you at the end of the day. And the proof's in the pudding. Man won a lot of football games and put a lot of championships in the trophy cases at Oklahoma. So it was honor and a privilege, as I've said these last couple of days, probably 1,000 times, and so true. Just an honor and a privilege to have a chance to play for Bob Stoops, and, you know, really just get a chance to know him as a man, not just as a football coach and as a father and as a husband, and just a good dude that you love to sit back, have some dinner and a cold beverage with, and just an all around good guy. So again, like I said a second ago, the best decision I made growing up, and led me to my wife and my family, and all the things I'm doing now was committing to Bob Stoops that day after they beat Nebraska. And, you know, really just trying to follow and look at some of the characteristics that have made him so successful, try to pick some of those and see if I can implement those in my life. And it's just been, it's been a great relationship that I look forward to continuing with him for quite some time.
Now, you were a part of the 2003 squad, which has got to be one of my favorite squads that Oklahoma's put together during the Bob Stoops era, mainly because of two games, and that being the Texas beatdown of 2003 and then the 77-0 blanking of Texas A&M. Yeah, we lost in the Big 12 championship and then lost to LSU. That was Jason White's elbow that no one was talking about. But reflect back on those teams that you were with at Oklahoma, because I mean, you went on to go play pro with Tommy Harris as well. But, I mean, it was a great squad. And talk about the cohesiveness of that squad.
It was it's a shame that we don't have a championship from 2003. Give Nick Saban and LSU a ton of credit. It's just a shame because that team was unbelievably talented on both sides of the ball. And, you know, when you look back and you really look at those rosters and you've got – you know, a Butkus a winner and Teddy Lehman, a Thorpe a winner and Derek Strait, a Hendricks finalist and Dan Cody, a Lombardi winner and Tommy Harris, a Heisman Trophy winner and Jay Sawyer. I mean, it was just insane what we had from a talent perspective, an Outland Trophy winner and Jamal Brown, All-American and Mark Clayton. I mean, we were just so loaded and really those teams back then, I just remember we just worked so hard, man, from day one. Like, you know, Coach got there and for that 99 season and they completely changed everything with Jerry Smith and the workout regimen and just the effort that they were going to put in to committing themselves to excellence. And I got there after the 2000 national title and it's like, you know, we haven't done anything yet. We got to keep this thing going. So it was just always a grind. And it was just always, we put in the work. What was so great about it is we saw the results on the field. And they coached us hard. They coached us good. And you combine passionate coaches that are really good at relating to players with some talented players that are hungry and looking to prove something. And we were able to win a bunch of football games. And, you know, really, as you look back, put together some of the better defenses that you've seen around the Big 12 and around Oklahoma in quite some time. So I still look back, though, and I talked to Coach, man. Was it last year, a couple years ago, Coach and I were chatting one day, and he reflected on that 03 team and just that Big 12 championship game against K-State and then that LSU game, and him and I talked, and he said of all of them, that's the team that hurts the most because just – can't believe that we weren't able to finish the job and get one. And I'm with him. And I put that on us as players because those coaches didn't sell us short. Bob Stoops didn't sell us short. Just wish we were able to maybe get one more because he's got 10 Big 12 championships. He's the all-time winningest coach at Oklahoma. He's got the one national title. But I don't even know if that really is reflective of the great job and the sustained dominance that there was at Oklahoma under Bob Stoops for so long, for 18 and a half years. And you kind of just feel like if we were able to get him, whether it was an 03 or 08, that one more national title and you get the multiple, that puts you in that very small group and that table that very few get to sit at. I think he belongs there. Resume may not say so. So as a player, I'm still a little salty and bitter that we weren't able to get him that second one. But it was a lot of fun to play on those teams and those defenses. And we flew to the football. We played fast. We played hard. And we got after people, man. That's what Sooner football playing for Bob Stoops is all about.
It really was. And I looked at a picture yesterday of what Owen Field looked like back in 99. And then you see, as it is so elegantly said on the radio calls, the Palace on the Prairie. The changes that have happened to the facilities there since Bob Stoops came on. And Joe Castiglione said it in the press conference on Thursday that the growth of all the sports, I mean, Patty Gasso would say it. I'm sure Lon Kruger would say it. And, you know, all the other sports have benefited from Bob Stoops being there at Oklahoma because they'd bring recruits in. It may be a golf recruit, which won a national championship this year as well. But, they, you know, and Coach would sit down and talk with them. How much is he going to be missed there on campus because of that?
There's really no way to put it, you know, to put an exact amount how much he'll be missed. You know, he'll be missed by all. He'll be missed by players, fans, his staff, his coaches that I spoke to so many different times that love working for Bob Stoops. So many coaches have told me Bob Stoops is the best coach I've ever worked for. The way he cares about family and the time he allows us. But you're exactly right. All those other sports that, whether it was because, you know, if you go back, it's the Flutie effect, right? The Doug Flutie effect for back when they won on the Hail Mary and the increase in people going to school at Boston College. You can see it now at Alabama. It's been that way at Oklahoma, whether it's people wanting to enroll to be a part of that football program or other athletes that want to be, that know that the football program, the marquee program, it kind of holds the torch for all universities and college athletics. It's strong. So we want to go be a part of that. Not to mention the financial standpoint of, you know, you mentioned the facilities and the money that they've been able to bring in, but also the revenue they've been able to spread across all those other sports to give them the facilities, to give them the money that, you know, to pay their good coaches and all those things. So all those are things Bob Stoops brought to the table over the last 18 and a half years. And how much will it be missed? I would say, I mean, an extraordinary amount. The question is, can his predecessor, can the man following him, can Lincoln Riley, can he continue what Bob has built and what he's got rolling right now? And if he can do it, that'll definitely make Bob maybe miss a little bit less. But clearly, Bob Stoops is a legend, and he's left an impact and an imprint on the University of Oklahoma that, you know, we'll be talking about, and you will be seeing the fruits of his labors for decades and decades down the line.
Okay, now I have one more reflective question before we go looking forward for Oklahoma. People that aren't as acquainted with the program as you are, of course, as I am, you know, are trying to think of all these different reasons why he retired. You know, I've heard, you know, the health, and yeah, you know, his dad did pass away at 54 while coaching a game. I know that has to be weighing on him. But, and there's people saying, well, it's because of the whole Mixon situation. And I've tried to put that bed almost immediately. My viewpoint, and it is what we're going to be talking about in a second, is that it was the perfect time. The team is a national contender. He'd been grooming Lincoln for this the past couple years. And if Lincoln didn't become the head coach at Oklahoma, the end of next season, he's going to be the head coach somewhere else. And I don't think that Joe Castiglione, Bob, or anybody involved with the Oklahoma Sooners wanted that to happen.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, what you said is exactly right. I mean, it is a perfect time if Bob wanted to ride off into the sunset, right? Back-to-back Big 12 championships, back-to-back top five finishes, winning your last 10 games and winning down in the Sugar Bowl, to have all the facilities in place, already a good recruiting class in tow, a lot of pieces coming back to where you're, you know, you have the best, I believe ESPN FPI has Oklahoma as the best chances to win their conference of the Power Five conferences, which would tell you that they're one of the top five teams to probably be in the college football playoff. So he's tossing the keys to somebody, Lincoln Riley, at a great time to give a young, inexperienced coach the best opportunity to flourish and also to continue the sustained success that Bob and all of his coaches have built over these last 18 and a half years. You don't build something and invest that much in it and not care what happens after you're gone. So I think the value in the fact that Bob was able to bring in Lincoln, handpick him, know that this is the guy, have all the coaches in tow, and here it is in June, no coaches leaving, your recruiting class is still set up. Really, I mean, it changes things, don't get me wrong, but from a being able to operate and continue kind of on this upward trajectory, you're not hindered in many ways. And I think Coach saw some real value in that. I think that's an aspect of it. I think that, you know, the fact that, like you said, his father died at 54, he has the genetic gene that his father had, that he passed away. He's had some high cholesterol and some other issues that he's really watched and kept his health in check. But, I mean, my guess would be that you factor all these different things in. His two twin boys are seniors, and they're both being recruited, and they're, you know, he's got the opportunity to watch them go through that. It kind of makes sense. And I also remember this. He's a Spurrier guy. And look how Steve Spurrier went out. It was very odd, wasn't it? Now, Steve Spurrier went out when they were kind of on bottom. And it almost felt like Steve Spurrier was kind of running from a losing season. Just get me out of here. But I spoke with Coach about that after it had happened. Because on my radio show, I beat up Steve pretty good. And I love the old ball coach. And I've known how special he is to Coach Stoops. That's his main mentor. But I also I asked him about that. I asked Coach Stoops about, you know, Coach Spurrier leaving, and he kind of defended him, almost like he understood. And so now that this happened and happened kind of so shockingly and out of nowhere, it seems kind of fitting. It's almost like a Steve Spurrier thing to do. It's different than the way Steve Spurrier did it, but kind of out of the blue and when no one else expected it, kind of in that same type of feel. So the real question, you know, the question that I also kind of have, is this the last we see of Bob Stoops coaching? He loves football. He's a football guy. And after you sit around for a couple years with Carroll, which, you know, he loves his wife, he loves to travel, but Is he going to get that itch again? My guess would be no, but then again, you never really know.
If you'd have told me Bob was going to retire before Bill Snyder, I'd have laughed at you.
But, isn't that crazy?
But let's look forward. You were talking about what Bob knew of Lincoln Riley. You were around the program. Tell us about Lincoln Riley from the man you know.
Well, he's impressive, man. So I met Lincoln since he first came on campus. I had a chance to be around him at his practices, the way he interacts with players, recruits, fans, media. He's the real deal. He says the right thing. He acts the right way. He's a family man, just good moral fiber. I mean, everything you look for. He X's and O's. And this is a guy that, you know, went to Texas Tech as a walk-on. And Mike Leach basically said, you're not going to play football. You need to be a coach. And basically became Mike Leach's understudy at 19 years old. I think he was the interim coach at Tech at 26. You know, Colin plays East Carolina at 26, almost like a young Doogie Howser, if you will, in the coaching world. And the minute you speak to him and talk to him, you know that this guy's a little different. He gets it. So I think Lincoln Riley is going to do a good job. And I think he is in a situation, a very high expectation. So that's going to be interesting how he handles those. But he's in a perfect position to flourish. I do think he has all the things you would look for in a quality head college football coach. But he's never been the man, and you never know how you can do as the man until you become that. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. If you're asking me, I think Lincoln Riley's going to do well. I think he's going to be successful and continue what Bob Stoops has built at Oklahoma. But you never know. Following a legend in college football, really in all of sports, is extremely difficult. Look after Barry Switzer. Look after Mac Brown. Really just look after Joe Paterno. I mean, so many, after these legends leave, it's tough for that first guy to step in and live up to the expectations that was there from a living legend. And that's what Lincoln Riley is going to be tasked with, following up a great coach like Bob Stoops.
Will Lincoln Riley succeed at Oklahoma? We'll have to wait and see. But we've seen it with Bud Wilkinson, with Barry Switzer, and with Bob Stoops. All of them had success early, and they were all in their early to mid-30s when they were hired. We'll have to see what happened. I want to thank Dusty Dvorak one more time for coming on the show. He will be a friend of the show throughout the season as well, so we can get our checkup on the University of Oklahoma. That's going to wrap up this week's show. If you missed any part of it or just want to hear it again, make sure you check out the podcast. You can get there at Extra Sports 1300. Just go to the drop-down menu for shows. Go to University of Fish. Click on there at the bottom of the page. It will say click here for University of Fish podcast. Or if that sounds like just a little too much work, which it's really not, go to iTunes, search University of Fish, and subscribe, and you'll never miss another show again. You can get the show every week delivered right to your mobile devices or right there on your desktop, however you want to get iTunes. But that's going to wrap us up for this week. Next week is going to be another great show, so make sure you tune in next week, 7 a.m., right here on Extra Sports 1300. I'm the Professor. Coming up next, the other football show with Chris Braden and Ryan Kaufman, right here on Extra Sports 1300.